the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it is that time of the year. Winter is almost upon us, along with the holidays, and people are thinking of, well, getting out of the snow and perhaps doing some traveling. Joining us on the program is Bob Levenstein. He's CEO of Cruise Compete. And Bob, before we begin, I want to talk about cruising and the weather. Is there a seasonal pattern to cruises? In other words, you probably wouldn't be taking Alaska cruise around this time of the year, maybe in the summer. Is there a seasonal pattern to cruising?
Oh, there absolutely is. Alaska, the season tends to run from May into September. In Europe, most of the ocean cruising is done in between those same months. What you have is a lot of ships that will relocate from Europe and Alaska down to the Caribbean and warmer destinations as the weather gets colder.
Let's talk about the longer cruises and also safety at sea, because we've seen, you know, hurricanes. My in-laws, I hate to bring this up, they were on a cruise in Europe and a huge storm came in and they just had to stay out in the ocean and wait it out. What happens when you're on a long cruise and weather goes in the wrong direction?
Wherever you choose to vacation, there's always an issue of what's the weather going to be like. One of the nice things about cruising is the captain of the ship has a lot of information in advance about what the weather's going to be. They can see the storm patterns, what's forming. And that gives them a great advantage to be able to change where the ship is. A big part of this is, you know, being able to change the schedule, go to a different port, or spend an extra sea day in order to avoid the bad weather. So overall, I would say it's a plus of cruising rather than a minus. If you're at a hotel and a storm's going to hit, you really can't move that hotel.
Yeah, that's true. Ships do move. I want to get into, you publish kind of trends in cruising. You just published a report in October. I want to go through that.
Sure.
Explain to me the booking window of time, and that is the number of days between the date the cruise was booked and the date it sails. And you've got some days down here like 182, 296, 290. Explain that.
The higher end the cruise, the more expensive it is. The further out in advance it tends to be booked. People don't plan a quick three-night vacation cruise a year in advance. Those tend to be really short-term choices. However, especially when you're talking about things like river cruises, which have, you know, a lot of these ships will only carry a couple hundred passengers. Often those are booked a year or more in advance. The other thing that you find is as people get older and more financially successful, they're able to plan things further in advance. Their, you know, lives get a little less hectic once you reach a certain level of affluence, and you can make these decisions a long way before your vacation.
Explain to me the difference between a luxury cruise, a regular cruise that most people go on. I mean, what's the difference? Is it just bigger rooms, nicer accommodations, better food? Explain the difference between that.
Luxury is kind of a loaded word in this particular market. Everybody likes to think that their sailing is luxurious, and to a certain extent, that's probably true. However, there are different levels and classes of service and what you can expect. The mainstream lines, your Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian would probably fit in that category, MSC cruises. They're more of a mass market sort of an audience. Even that said, it gets more complicated because you do have higher-end staterooms on some of these. But overall, think of that as appealing to more, you know, regular folks. Then you have a half step up from there are lines like Celebrity, Holland America. These lines are designed for a slightly older crowd. The focus is more on service. It's on some higher quality food. It's a little bit less on entertainment. There's a little bit less focus on kids. Now, these are all large ship cruise lines. Then we start to get into the ultra luxury market, I guess is what they call it. And you start to have some smaller ships. Instead of 2,000 or 5,000 passengers, maybe they only carry 1,000 passengers, 500 passengers, 300 passengers. And these are lines like Oceania, Azamara. There are a number of smaller ship cruise lines that cater to people who are really used to six-star service. Really top-end chefs and over-the-top service. Your staterooms do tend to be larger. And it's really more on a, more of a, an atmosphere of relaxation and quiet luxury versus water slides and Broadway shows.
You know, some of my older clients tell me that they love taking cruises, whether it's to Europe or different places around the world, because it's unlike, let's say, going to hotels and you're going to see different countries. You're always packing your bags. Nice thing with a cruise ship, you unpack your bags once, you stay on board the ship. But tell me this, can you really see, like, let's say I'm going to take a European river cruise or just cruise the Mediterranean. Do you really get to sightsee as much as versus, let's say, staying in a hotel in Rome and seeing the city versus a cruise ship?
You're talking about three very different types of experiences. Going to a country, a city, staying there for a week, obviously, yes, you're going to see a lot more. The difference between a river cruise and an ocean cruise, too, ocean cruises are really more focused on the ship. On things that you do on the ship. Yes, you're going to have port calls and you may be able to get off the ship at 9 and you're back on the ship at 4. But with an ocean cruise, just because of the requirements of docking a large ship, you tend to be further out from where most of the stuff is, right? What really appeals to a lot of people about a river cruise is the rivers tend to run right through town. They're a lot more port focused. You can hop on and hop off in different places. And when you do get off, you're right in the center of town usually because, you know, where did towns grow up? They grew up around a water source. The river tends to run right through the city. So you're very close to a lot of the things that you want to do and see. And it's really a very nice way to see Europe and a lot of these destinations because you get off the ship and you're right there.
Do those river cruises, they tend to be smaller. Obviously, you're on a river versus the ocean. But what about the accommodations on a river cruise versus, let's say, obviously an ocean liner?
The cabins can be a little bit smaller. But what you tend to get are ships that instead of having 5,000 passengers, you may only have 200, 120, 300 passengers. You don't have all of the onboard entertainment and recreation that you would have on a big ocean cruise ship, but the level of service and luxury tends to be on a par with, you know, your Oceania's or Silver Seas level of cruises, the very high-end stuff.
And as you survey the cruising market, obviously there's Carnival, there's Holland, there's various cruise lines. What have you found to be the most popular cruise lines?
Well, popular is kind of a loaded question. When these ships sail, they sail full. And the reason is, looking at it from a financial standpoint, the overhead for the cruise line does not go down if cabins are empty. You've got the same amount of staff, you're stocking the same amount of food, you're burning the same amount of fuel, whether half the cabins are empty or all the cabins are full. So what the lines do is they work very hard to make sure that they set their pricing and they set discounts and they set promotions to make sure that they fill these ships. Because especially on the ocean ships, they make as much as half of their revenue off of onboard spend. People gambling in the casino, people buying drinks, people buying short excursions, shopping on board, things like that. The other reason that they want these ships to sail full is every cruise you take makes you more likely to take another cruise with that line. They just really tend to be great experiences, and the satisfaction rates are very, very high in cruising. And that's really where Cruise Compete comes in, because the prices are not all equal. If you pick the same cabin on the same cruise and you go to five different agencies, you may get five different offers. Now, the prices may all be the same, or the prices may vary. Your price may include onboard credit. So in other words, dollars in your shipboard account that you can spend on things on board. You may get free upgrades. You may get other perks, free insurance, a free bottle of wine, a dinner in a specialty restaurant. And all of these things vary based on which agency, what that agency's relationship to the cruise line is. And so the way that Cruise Compete works is you pick your cruise, and then we have more than 500 different travel agencies who will compete to offer you the best deal. So you create your quote request, you get usually 4 to 7 different offers from agencies, you can read about those agencies, you compare the offers, and you stay anonymous unless and until you decide to contact that agency for more information or to book. So basically, it makes it a lot easier to shop around, and really, I guess the words financial sense keep coming back to me, because it's a big purchase, and you know, you should save as much money as you can.
When you book a cruise, depending on the line, luxury, regular cruise line, what does that cost include? Obviously includes your room, food. What is included in that price and what is excluded?
Well, the first thing you want to do is when you get that price or when you're shopping around online is make sure you're looking at the full price. Because one trick that a lot of websites do is they don't include the taxes until that final booking screen. So you see your price and you've compared it and you think you got a better deal. And then when you go to that final screen, that price goes up a bit with the taxes. That's why on Cruise Compete, we require all prices to include everything. But on the major mainstream lines, what's generally going to be included is your room, most of your entertainment, and most of your food. The big cost from there, there are your drinks. Often there will be specialty restaurants. Where you can pay a little bit extra to get a fancier meal. And then the other costs you're going to spend, your onshore spend, any short excursions that you purchase through the line, tip, those are often better to purchase directly through a consolidator. Cruise Compete, for example, we work with a company called Short Trips, and you generally get better, less expensive, and smaller short excursions. You know, you don't have 1,000 people. But as you move up in class on these cruise lines, sometimes your drinks are included. Sometimes all of the restaurants are included. Sometimes your short excursions are included. There are even some places where some of your airfare might be included in the package. It really just depends. Something else that you can do on the main cruise lines is take a look at what you can buy before you get on board. There are drink packages. Now, usually what I found in looking at these is there is no way I can drink enough every day for 7 days to make those packages worthwhile for me. I could see doing it one day, maybe, and then recovering for two or three because, boy, you really tend to need to drink a lot to make those worthwhile. Other things, though, that I have taken advantage of are often the internet, especially on the mainstream lines. Internet will not be included. You've got to pay for that. If you buy that before you get on board, you get a better deal. Carnival, for instance, I happen to like Carnival, even though it's a lower end line, because you get a lot of fun people who are going out to have a good time. And it's they don't tend to nickel and dime you as much as some other lines. They have a deal with a bottle of water. So I think for about $5, you get a 12-pack of bottled water delivered to your cabin. So bought several of those for the course of the cruise. That was quite nice.
When you talk about entertainment is included, I've had clients have cruised. They say they have movie theaters, they have gyms, they have swimming pools, plus dinner shows in the evening. My sister-in-law once worked in entertainment on a cruise line for a year.
Oh, nice.
So what is included in entertainment? In other words, in that package, what are the entertainment facilities I have if I'm going to be on board this giant ocean liner?
Just about everything you've mentioned would be included. All the pools, all of the, just about all of the shows. You know, occasionally there'll be, say, one dinner show, special dinner. I was on a Norwegian cruise where they had an acrobatic circus show. It was actually really well done. That included a special dinner. That cost a little bit more money. But all of those other things, all of the Broadway style shows, if there's a skating rink, the skating rink's included. If there's a surf simulator, the surf simulator is included. All of this stuff is generally included in your on your cruise. And, you know, there's just lots of other things going on. There'll be trivia games daily that you can go to. There will be demonstrations of ice carving or, you know, classes, et cetera. Just about all of that stuff is included. It's rare that something is not.
Let's talk about rooms and what they cost. I mean, you have general cabins, and then, you know, I've seen on some of these ships where you have they're almost like a penthouse with an outdoor covered patio. Explain to me or our listeners what the cost is and how much it varies between, let's say, your standard room all the way up to the penthouse.
Well, the costs are all over the board. You know, it depends on the cruise line. It depends on when you're sailing. You're going to pay probably three or four times as much sailing over the Christmas holidays as you would sailing 2 weeks before. The first, second week of December is probably the cheapest time to cruise and really one of the best, to be honest. Cabin types vary. If we're talking about ocean cruises, you have inside cabins that will be windowless. You have ocean view cabins, which will have a window. From there, you go up to balcony, which is just what it sounds like. You have a balcony, you can go out and look at the ocean. But they're going up. There are about as many different kinds of cabins as there are cruise lines and cruise ships. You've got what they call junior suites or mini suites, which are basically a balcony cabin that's a little bit bigger. You have family suites where you can put several people in a cabin. you have spa suites that give you access to special decks. And what you're talking about, a penthouse suite, there are luxury suites on some of these ships that are a 2,000 square foot apartment, essentially. And those can cost, you know, $10,000 for just a for a one week cruise or more. So it really depends. And the exact same suite on the same ship, sailing the same itinerary, may cost more 1 week than it will the week before, depending is it a holiday, are kids out of school, does there just happen to be a lot of demand for that sailing? Because these prices vary all over the place. They go up and down. The computers do it automatically to make sure they try to fill that ship.
You just mentioned, you know, maybe the first week in December is a good time to cruise. Are there specific times of the year that, you know, the cruise ships offer more bargains for potential passengers? I mean, I know some of my clients tell me when they like to go to Europe, they either like to go either in May or maybe September and October. The weather's nicer, it's less crowded, and the prices are cheaper.
Yes. When you're talking about cruising in the U.S. or out of U.S. ports, the most important thing to remember is, are the kids in school? When kids are in school, prices are a lot lower. And so you're going to go up over the Christmas holidays. It's going to be higher around spring break time. Counterintuitively, it's going to be more expensive to go to the Caribbean in the summer, even though there are a lot more ships there. And you would think that people don't want to go to hot weather in the summer. But the summer, you know, it's more expensive in the summer. The fall, the those first couple weeks in December are great, especially because, you know, look, people have just gotten through Thanksgiving. They've been focused on that. Maybe they travel for Thanksgiving. Now they're thinking about Christmas. They're spending money on Christmas presents. They're focused on the holidays. That's a great time to go. You know, it's chillier here in the North America, and you'll find fewer people. Europe, same thing. There's a lot of Europeans take their vacations over those summer months. And it's nice to be able to go in May or September. Same answer with Alaska. You've got kids in school, but it's going to be a little bit colder in September in Alaska. You can see some snow. Same with May. So you've got to factor those things into your decision process.
So when you look at cruising, is there any one type of cruising destination that tends to be more popular? I mean, if you were to take a look at your business, is there anything that collates around one type of cruise or one particular type of destination or time of year?
Well, I mean, the bulk of the market is the Caribbean, because that's a year-round destination. There are lots of big ships. You know, you put one ship with 5,000 that'll carry 5,000 passengers into a marketplace. You've got cruise lines very motivated to fill that ship. That's going to be the most popular place you go. Really, the big three for us are the Caribbean, Alaska, and Europe is where most of the business is. But again, because the Caribbean's a year-round destination that has almost all of the ships in the winter months, and Alaska and Europe are seasonal destinations, the Caribbean is really going to dominate. But you've got other places to go. I mean, there are a lot of people who like the leaf-peeping cruises, you know, up to Canada from the East Coast. You know, obviously other destinations, people want to do world cruises. They want to go to the Galapagos Islands. But these tend to be much more niche type of destinations.
What about river cruises? We see a lot of commercials here for river cruises throughout Europe, which look rather interesting. You're going down this nice river. You're seeing castles up on the hill, major cities, as you pointed out. What does something like that generally run?
The numbers are all over the place because it depends on when you go. It depends on which line you take. But you can be anywhere, say, from on the low end, not including airfare, say, on the $4,000 to $5,000 range, up to, you know, you might be taking a two-week cruise. You may be at $12,000 for two people. It really, really depends. And one of the things that you mentioned, you're talking about the booking window. The river cruises tend to be booked very far in advance because they fill up. River cruising essentially has replaced the old-time, you know, bus tours of Europe, because you're traveling in much more comfort and much more luxury. It's a lot more fun to, you know, relax in your cabin and, you know, watch the landscape go by than sit on a bus. You have all your stuff. You have, you know, your bathroom and your food, and everything is right there. So the river lines are getting more and more and more popular, and everybody that I've ever talked to who's been on one has absolutely loved it.
Let me throw a negative at you. Of course, anytime something happens, you know, the media tends to sensationalize everything. But, you know, we've heard about things outbreaking on a ship where people get sick or something like that. How rare is that? And is it just overpublicized? Or are there some issues that you need to be aware of?
There's the law, maritime law, that says if 3% of the passengers and crew in total on a ship have the same illness, you have to report that to the CDC. And for some reason, CNN and other folks think that this merits headlines. The illness that they're talking about is called norovirus. On average, you know it as we used to call it the 24-hour flu or the stomach flu. But on average, if you live in the U.S., you get it once every 3 years. If you were at a hotel and 3% of the people of that hotel had norovirus, you would almost certainly never know that that happened. But it's really just this quirk of maritime law that makes it publicized. I don't think it happens any more frequently on ships. And in fact, when people have it on the ship, because of the incubation period, it's usually because they had it when they got on rather than they got it on board. But these cruise lines are very, very, very focused on it. You'll see lots of people scrubbing things down all day. Before you go into the buffet, you'll be required to sanitize your hands with hand sanitizer. When you leave the buffet, there's hand sanitizer, and there are actually people there to make sure you use it. You're probably safer on the cruise from illness than you would be, at a hotel or in a shopping mall or anywhere else.
And what about medical facilities? Somebody has a heart attack or, you know, they just get sick or something. Do they have doctors on board these ships?
Yeah, all these ships have doctors on board and nurses. When you get down to we're talking about the large ships, the ocean-going vessels. If you're talking about the river ships, you're really not that far from a hospital. Wherever you are, it's pretty easy to get off and get you to where you need to be. I have also seen, actually twice on cruises that I've been on, there have been, the Coast Guard has flown out and brought a helicopter down to evacuate somebody. There was someone who was drunk and decided to dive headfirst into a hot tub, which is really not a good idea. Yeah, seriously. So we had to change. But, you know, the cruise lines are they're more concerned about the health of that person than they are about anything. You know, we changed our sailing schedule. We went to a different port than when we were supposed to. I mean, they're really focused on making sure if somebody has an illness or an injury that they get taken care of. Another time, someone had a heart attack. They did help them on board, but then they ended up flying a Coast Guard chopper to pick that person up and take them directly to a hospital.
And as you look at cruising in general, are there popular ports that are visited or, let's say, popular ports for departure where you're going to find more cruise ships available for getting to various destinations?
Oh, absolutely. Miami and Fort Lauderdale are probably the most popular ports. But I think the key thing is, look, flying is inconvenient, as we all know. It's also expensive. So there are a lot of ports now where you can cruise close to home. You live in, you know, New York, New Jersey, you can drive to a port and cruise from there. There are ports down the East Coast in Virginia, Carolina. There are now, I think, 5 cruise ports in Florida.
Yeah, we even have them in California, San Diego, Los Angeles.
Yes, they keep adding ports out there. There are ports in, you know, Texas and New Orleans. So when I cruise, one of the first things I look at is what's convenient to get to. You know, for example, there's a little airline. I'm here in Iowa. There's a little airline called Allegiant that flies directly to St. Petersburg. I think about, you know, do I want to do that and sail out of Tampa, you know, or do I want to have to change planes and sail out of Miami? It just depends on what's on offer and what the prices are. So it's really good to take a look and compare. In fact, on Cruise Compete in our search, we have a little feature that lets you select a region of the country for departure ports to see what's close to you in terms of getting there, because that makes it a lot more convenient.
You know, as we close here, Bob, can you tell us a little bit about your company, what you guys do? And let's say I've never taken a cruise before, or I have, and I'm thinking of taking another one. What's the advantage of talking to people like yourself?
Well, the first thing that you want to do when you come to Cruise Compete is figure out what cruise you want to take. There are a lot of different options to do that. We have something called our Virtual Cruise Advisor, where you answer 5 quick questions, and then it puts you into search with some recommended itineraries. You can also go to our live help and talk to someone, or you can just use our cruise search in general to look around and see, you know, you can select destinations you may want to see, you know, show me cruises that visit this port. Or you can, as we just talked about, show me cruises that depart from this port. And then you're going to put in a few little pieces of information to create an account so we know where to send your quotes. And then you create what we call a quote request. In other words, you say, hey, I want to go on this cruise. Here's the type of cabin I want. Here is the, you know, here are the dates. Here are the passenger ages to see if I get discounts for that. There are a couple other possible things you might check to get other discounts, passenger, whether you have a Platinum American Express card, things like that. And then at that point, when you hit enter, as soon as you do that, we have more than 500 different travel agencies, probably about 1,200 different travel agents who can see your request. And the agents that specialize in that line, who have the best deals on that line, can read what you're looking for, and they'll respond with their absolute best packages, their best offers. At that point, instead of just taking whatever price you're given, you've got 3, 5, 7 different choices. And you can compare these based on what's important to you. Somebody may be offering a drink package and you don't drink. That's not useful to you. Somebody else, you know, may be offering a cabin upgrade and you really want that. The prices may vary a little bit. The amount of onboard credit being offered definitely varies. And so you can compare these and think about it and really get the best deal for you without having to go site to site, put your information in over and over again. The other advantage is these agencies know that they're competing. So they're going to come out with their best offers right off the bat. And really, you should probably be seeing a savings of somewhere between 5 and 12% off what the cruise line would charge. From there, you have the option. At this point, you're still anonymous. These agents don't know who you are. They're not contacting you. You're in control. At that point, you can pick up the phone or you email and you contact these folks for more information or to go ahead and book your cruise. So it really just takes a process that can be, and we've all booked travel, and you know it can take hours and hours going around to different sites. This is about making it easy and making it simple for you in a way that you still get that best deal.
So for our listeners who are thinking of taking a cruise or would like to take advantage of the service that Cruise Compete offers, even if you just want to see what's being offered, there's a special link located at financialsense.com right now. Bob, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. This is that time of the year. It's getting a little cooler. A lot of people like to travel. And as you say, sometimes this is some of the best times of the year to get bargains. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Once again, folks, this is a popular way to travel. I know with a lot of my retired clients, they just simply love cruising. So we thought we'd bring this on the show and tell you about the various avenues open up to you, the bargains, and the different adventures. Hope you enjoyed the program.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.